Coming up, Lucky Severson on the frustration of trained would-be mainline Protestant ministers who can't find jobs doing the work they feel called by God to do.
It's not just what I do, it's what I am.
Also, preparing to die. Bob Fall reports on what a prominent rabbi calls his December project, the spiritual, theological, and even musical work of learning to trust and let go.
I've got my traveling shoes. Ba-bum, ba-bum, ba-bum.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Welcome, I'm Bob Abernethy. It's good to have you with us. Faith-based organizations are mobilizing to aid victims of this week's deadly storms that hit large sections of the country. Local congregations and groups from many denominations are helping to assess the damage and determine needs. Several disaster response teams provided meals and water for first responders and people displaced from their homes. Many groups are now helping with cleanup and developing long-term assistance plans. Religious leaders are among those condemning this week's botched execution in Oklahoma, and many are calling for a new examination of the death penalty in the U.S. Oklahoma City Roman Catholic Archbishop Paul Coakley said the failed lethal injection and ultimate heart attack death of convicted killer Clayton Lockett highlight the brutality of the death penalty. The group People of Faith Against the Death Penalty urged religious groups to step up efforts to abolish all executions. Escalating violence in Ukraine is intensifying worldwide concerns about the crisis with Russia. Meanwhile, one of Ukraine's highest profile Jews was shot this week. Gennady Kerenis, mayor of Ukraine's second largest city, was flown to Israel for treatment. At the Vatican, Pope Francis renewed calls for dialogue during a meeting with Ukraine's prime minister. And in Moscow, Russian Orthodox Patriarch Kirill urged church leaders not to take sides in the crisis in order to better advocate for peace. Mass protests were held in Nigeria on behalf of more than 270 schoolgirls kidnapped last month. Crowds urged the Nigerian government to do more to rescue them. This week, there were reports that the girls are being sold into marriage to Islamist militants. Activists here in the U.S. have also taken up the Bring Back Our Girls campaign. The United Church of Christ and several local clergy filed an unusual lawsuit this week, arguing that North Carolina's ban on same-sex marriage violates their religious freedom. Many groups oppose gay marriage on religious grounds, but this lawsuit claims that because performing marriages is a religious act, the state is denying clergy who support gay marriage the ability to exercise their faith. More than 250 evangelical pastors gathered in Washington to pray for a breakthrough in the legislative stalemate over immigration reform. They also lobbied Congress to pass a bill this year. The leaders stressed that immigration is a moral issue. Among them was prominent conservative Southern Baptist leader Paige Patterson.
We're grateful for the opportunity to be here and to support immigration reform and see to it that America continues to be a country that fears God and that reaches out in kindness and love.
Amid speculation about whether she'll run for president, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton made some rare public comments about her Methodist faith. At a gathering of United Methodist women in Louisville, Clinton spoke about the importance of her upbringing in the church.
I always cherished the Methodist Church because It gave us the great gift of personal salvation, but the great obligation of social gospel. Having hope, faith, and love in action was exactly what we were called to do.
We have a Lucky Severson story today on the frustration and disappointment of seminary-trained men and women who feel called by God to be ministers, but who can't find mainline Protestant churches that can afford to hire them. Part of the problem is the lingering recession. Part of it is the mainline decline. Fewer church members, therefore less money to pay pastors.
Matt Seelbach graduated from Covenant Theological Seminary in St. Louis, but now he creates videos. He made a choice that an increasing number of seminary and divinity school graduates are being forced to make, to do something other than being a pastor.
I had some phone calls, I had some interviews, but nothing ultimately panned out. Our film company that I started, our focus is to cultivate goodness, to uproot ugliness and cultivate goodness, and to show good in the world.
Alan Sipe started looking for a pastoring job long before he graduated with a master's degree 3 years ago. For now, he's working as a shopping mall security guard.
It's disheartening. You know, you send out scores of resumes and get no answers.
The reality is there are not nearly as many available jobs as pastors as there were even a few years ago. Seminaries and divinity schools have seen a drop in enrollment, and especially in the number of graduates who become pastors. There are several reasons, but the main one is that not as many people are attending mainline churches anymore. So there is less need and less money to afford a pastor. This is Greg Sterling, dean of the Yale Divinity School.
There are about 300,000 congregations and churches in the United States. I don't know what percentage of those are financially viable in the sense of having the capacity of supporting someone on a full-time basis, but my guess is that the majority are not.
Yale Divinity School students come from several different denominations. Last year, only 1 in 5 graduates went on to become church pastors. 16% became chaplains at hospitals and schools. About that many will teach in parochial and independent schools. A majority of the rest go to work for nonprofits, like Stephen Mossback. Even as he completes his 3-year master's degree, he's working for a church organization that builds affordable housing. He has a master's in real estate development and was arranging financing for rich home buyers. But something was missing.
Missing in the sense that when you're giving financing to multimillionaires in New York City and you're saving them an eighth on their mortgage rate, you're not really helping anyone but them.
So he applied at Yale, and he's received generous financial aid from the school. He won't have a congregation, he says, but he'll have a ministry, building affordable housing.
For me, being a pastor is something that's sacred, that you have a calling you feel that the Lord has placed on your heart. And I felt that my calling has been in the social sector and housing.
Dean Sterling says it's not unusual to have students who had a promising career but found it spiritually unsatisfying. 20% of entering Yale Divinity School students hold advanced degrees, like Allison McKinney, who has law and MBA degrees. She has worked as an international human rights lawyer specializing in women's rights.
I realized that a lot of what I wanted to say about human rights and about women's rights, I wanted to say to my own faith community, because I believe that justice is work of the church. It is a ministry that we're called as Christian believers to be involved in.
Enrollment in theological schools has been dropping since 2006. Dean Sterling says, along with the declining membership in virtually all but the more conservative denominations, another big factor is student debt.
If you incur $50,000 in debt through graduate school, but if your annual income is $35,000 a year, it's an enormous sum.
It's a seminary sponsored by individual mainline denominations that have taken the biggest hit in enrollment. The Luther Seminary in St. Paul was forced to cut its faculty after losing enrollment the last 5 years. Covenant Theological Seminary in St. Louis is run by the Presbyterian Church in America, and some of its graduates are having a hard time finding jobs.
What are y'all playing?
5 years ago, Brian Brown moved his wife and four kids from Alabama and his job as an accountant to attend Covenant and become a pastor.
I was always thinking there's going to be a job at the end of this. You know, that was the hope. That's the desire. It's still the desire.
Now, a year after graduation, he's working two part-time jobs. His wife works full-time. Brown is struggling to make ends meet and to find a church that wants him and can afford a pastor.
Churches depend on the giving of others for their support and for paying for the ministry that is done. So as other people suffer in the economy, it trickles down.
Students genuinely feel that existentially they have been challenged by God to serve people. How are they going to do that if they can't be supported by one of these churches?
The Lilly Endowment, which is the main funder of Religion and Ethics News Weekly, also sponsors a program to subsidize the salary the first 2 years of some new pastors like Corinne Ellis. She will leave Yale for a small church in Iowa.
I've seen the impact that God has had on my life and the lives of people I love, and I want to share that and help build that for other people.
Increasingly, students are planning on holding on to whatever careers and training they had before, and after they graduate, becoming part-time pastors. It's the new reality of smaller congregations.
I think people are distrustful of institutions, religious institutions, political institutions.
Donna DeSillis had an MBA from Harvard before she came to the Yale Divinity School. She thinks she knows the problem and the solution.
I think to the degree that we can connect people spiritually, then the churches thrive because people want to experience God. So when the church helps people experience God, the church has members. When the church doesn't help people experience God, then I think the church doesn't have members.
I've said to the students, I said to them this fall when they first matriculated, you will write the future of Christianity. I don't know what it will look like. I'm sure it will be different than it is today, but you will write that history, and we're here to prepare you to write that history.
I think church is going to change in the future. I don't think, you know, denominations as they exist today are going to exist the same way in 20 years. I think the church is changing and has to change, and I think it's exciting to be part of that.
The exciting part hasn't materialized for Brian Brown yet. He and his family continue to hang on. He's still sending out resumes, still has faith that someone up there is going to help him get a job as a pastor.
The decision to move my family and go after this was really the following of a call. And I couldn't have done this. And my wife couldn't have done this with us together without an understanding of this is what we believe is my calling.
Alan Sipe is still looking. He thinks churches won't hire him because he's 57 years old and they can get a much younger pastor.
I'll do whatever I have to do. I have a wife to support. I have bills like everybody else. I will do what I need to do. That's why I'm walking around the mall. But until I can't breathe anymore, I'm going to continue looking for opportunities to be able to teach and to be able to preach and to work with people. That's because that's what I am. It's not just what I do, it's what I am.
Dean Sterling says the number of students going into the ministry reached its nadir 3 years ago when only half as many graduates as in the past entered the ministry. He says that number is improving, but doesn't believe it will ever get back to what it was. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Lucky Severson in New Haven.
Updating a couple of stories we've reported in previous weeks, after strong protests from the Sisters of Loretto in Kentucky, the Williams Company of Tulsa has suspended plans to build the Bluegrass Pipeline. The company said it did not have enough committed customers to proceed. The Loretto sisters had rallied support against the pipeline, Sister Marie Vissi said the sisters are pleased to be part of a network of people urging, quote, a closer look at what we're doing to our land and water. And Georgia has a new law that will allow concealed weapons in many public places, including houses of worship. But this week, Atlanta Roman Catholic Archbishop Wilton Gregory promised to restrict the presence of guns in all Catholic institutions. Other churches are making similar pledges. Now, the December Project. There's a new book out by a woman who says she is a secular skeptic, but who spent every Friday for 2 years talking with a prominent rabbi about his theological, spiritual, and even musical preparations for dying. Bob Faw spoke with both Rabbi Zalman Schachter Shalomi and author Sarah Davidson.
Despite all her success as a best-selling novelist, a Hollywood screenwriter, and a journalist working in dangerous places, nothing she did, says Sarah Davidson, ever prepared her for the prospect of dying.
I would feel terror and nausea. Because I had no certainty that there is an afterlife, the idea of everything ending in nothing was terrible.
In 2009, though, Davidson was lucky enough to meet this remarkable man, Rabbi Zalman Schachter Shalomi, then 85, a founder of the Jewish Renewal Movement. Appearing recently at a Boulder, Colorado book signing, he remembered that when they met, he wanted someone to pass along all he had learned about dying.
I felt that what I needed to share with people at this time is the stuff that I didn't hear from any of my teachers.
He said, there is something I want to do with you. I want to have a series of talks about what I'm calling the December Project. When you feel you're coming to the end of your tour of duty, what is the spiritual work of that time, and how do we prepare for the mystery?
It was an unlikely collaboration. After a lifetime of scholarship and meditation, the faith of the rabbi was profound. Davidson, who considers herself a secular Jew, calls herself a spiritual mutt and a skeptic.
I've got this very cynical mind that's always poking holes in whatever theory or theology is presented to me. And he said, I don't want to convince you of anything. What I want is to loosen your mind.
The rabbi and the skeptic met every Friday for 2 years, with him teaching her that death is a mystery which need not be feared if she would trust her intuition more than her intellect.
Feeling and intuition, it has to do with the right hemisphere and with the heart. And anything that has to do with knowing the presence of God and preparing for dying, you know. The left hemisphere would say you should fight it, you don't want to die. The right hemisphere and the heart would say surrender to it. It's taking you to another place that's also real.
He said you need to create an inner space, an inner sanctuary, a place where you can go, that it will be like a home base in the midst of all the humble and rumble and tumble of life, that you can go inside and there's a place there that's quiet and still. And it's in that place that you can be most open to intuition.
What she learned from all those sessions is now chronicled in this book, The December Project, about getting in touch with what the rabbi calls that sacred inner space.
I want to cut myself off from all the other outside influences so that I can catch my breath and find my center. That is already creating the sanctuary with it. Sanctuary in the sense of I flee to the place where I feel safe.
Now, the big question is, how do you know something is genuinely intuition or guidance or wisdom and not just a random thought popping in your head? And I asked him that, and he said, there is no litmus test, unfortunately, to tell you this is authentic wisdom, this is a real intuition, or it's just a thought. But when it happens to me, if I feel like I can do something with it, then I have a sense that it's the real juice.
Only at that point, the rabbi taught her, is one able to let go and accept death.
really letting go is the ultimate message of the December Project and of, I think, all spiritual traditions. And it's something you do moment by moment by moment. You let go as things arise. You start with small things. Somebody cancels a lunch date that you were really looking forward to, and you've built your whole day around it, and suddenly it's gone. And, you know, you're disappointed, but can you let go of that disappointment? It really is about acceptance. Can you accept what is? And then you move on to bigger things. Ultimately to, I'm a mortal, and like every mortal, I will leave this earth one day.
Davidson said she learned that everything he taught stems from his unshakable conviction that in all things there is a touch of the divine, that God is as close as the vein in one's neck.
What he means is whatever that force is that causes my eyes to see and my heart to beat and the blood to flow through my body, whatever that source of kindness and love and oneness, whatever that is, I'm so grateful it's there.
When I say God, I don't mean necessarily an old man, but I mean a center of awareness, volition, and compassion and grace. And that I can make a space for if I spend time in my inner sanctuary.
If all this sounds too touchy-feely or impossibly dense, Davidson and the rabbi assured that Boulder audience that their Friday sessions were also filled with laughter and music.
It's a very meaningful melody for me as a way of getting into that space in which one can say goodbye to the body and to this world and to move on with a kind of hope and gentleness.
Here the rabbi, now 89, married 4 times with 11 children, reveals himself not only as a philosopher, but as an irrepressible showman, directing his listeners to act as a backup chorus. As the rabbi sings the spiritual Traveling Shoes, which is all about getting ready to meet one's maker.
Death come around to my father's door. Hey, old man, is you ready to go? And he said, hallelujah, I've done my duty. I've got my traveling shoes. Ba-boom, ba-boom, ba-boom.
You mean you're ready to go? You got on your traveling shoes?
Yes, says Rabbi Zalman, I'm now ready.
I just would like to be like a drop in the ocean and dissolve in the divine being. That's enough.
And while Sarah Davidson concedes she's not quite that far along, she says she's come a long way from that terror and nausea.
Having the gift of spending 2 years in intimate conversation with Reb Zalman has changed the way I approach life.
So you're more comfortable now with the concept of death?
Yes, I'm more comfortable, but I'm not where he is at yet. But I'm definitely getting there.
That notion of getting ready by letting go was imparted once again when the rabbi gave a benediction to his audience in Boulder.
God, I thank you for keeping me in the light. And I let go and let go and let go. Amen.
The spiritual heavyweight and the skeptical seeker confronting the mystery and the marvel of death together. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, this is Bob Faugh in Boulder, Colorado.
Finally, we have some good news to share. Our website has won the International Academy of Digital Arts and Sciences prestigious Webby Award for Best Website in the category of Religion and Spirituality. Thank you for your votes toward another award, The People's Voice, and for your years of steadfast support. That's our program for now. I'm Bob Abernethy. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook And watch us anytime on the PBS app for iPhones and iPads. And visit that award-winning website where there's always much more and where you can also listen to or watch each of our programs. Join us at pbs.org. As we leave you, scenes from the Vatican last week where Pope Francis and Pope Emeritus Benedict were part of the ceremony canonizing two of their predecessors, John Paul II and John the 23rd.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.